beginning of tape two with Jenny Grower. And we're going to start with a translation of the song about the border.
Well, years ago, the women had to have boarders because they couldn't afford to pay the rent. And they used to cook for the boarders. So they were charging like a quarter for a supper. And they used to wash the clothes from the boarders. Yeah. So one man was married and he got divorced. So he was going to move out. So when he got divorced, he was going to move out. His wife said, "Why should you move out and look for a place? Be a boarder by me." Yeah. So he became a boarder by his wife. And so he liked it so much because he said he can come whenever he wants, he can go whenever he wants, he can do whenever he wants because he's a boarder, you see. And so he's very, very happy. And he doesn't have to watch his wife when the butcher brings the meat. He doesn't have to be there. He's very, very happy. And that's why he pays her just the rent that you're a boarder. And he pays for his supper, and he has this money for himself. That's the idea, that ich bin a boarder by my wife. Okay, and that's a wonderful job, that he's a boarder by his wife.
Okay, we're going to stop 1 minute.
Okay. Pausing here.
Are your parents married?
And when I was a kid, I used to go to the Jewish theater. And you know how we went to the Jewish theater.
The theater
used to give you a poster to put in your window in the store. So they gave you free passes.
So did you see Jacob Adler?
So I used to go with my mother and father. I was maybe 4 years old. I used to go to the Jewish theater.
What do you remember about the Jewish theater?
I remember that every time that they had a part that they had to shoot somebody, I used to think that they're going to shoot. I used to hide under the chair.
One more time, I'm going to try to get rid of that.
And the Greene Cousine is, the song went, you know that.
I know they sang it in the Yiddish theater. Did you see Jacob Adler?
Yes.
In the Yiddish theater, and Maury Schwartz?
Yes. And Tomaszewski.
And Tomaszewski, you saw them all?
Yeah.
I didn't
know. Oh, well, when I was very little, I didn't know. And Kessler, David Kessler.
And David Kessler, right.
Yeah.
And there was another woman. I don't remember. David Kessler's wife, I think.
But I saw when I was little, you know, I didn't know anything.
But that was that's what was entertainment, was the Yiddish theater.
Yeah, but we only went because we got the passes. The free, you
right.
know.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So
yeah.
Did you hear
okay,
this?
We're going to start with
I used to hear these different things.
Question about the Yiddish theater?
Yeah. Jenny, the Yiddish theater, you mentioned the song, what is it, Greene Cousine?
Yes.
Did you hear that in the theater?
No, I don't think I heard it in the theater, but I heard the song. And then it went like this. Zu mir ist gekommen a Cousine. Schön wie gold ist sie gewesen, die Grüne. Bäcker lach wie rote Pomeranzen. In Fieser lach, was beten sich zum Tanzen. Sie ist nicht gegangen, nur gespringen. Sie hat nicht gerät, sie hat gesingen. Also ist gewesen, mein Grüne. Indus ist gewesen, mein Cousine. Sie jetzt auch bekannt mit meiner Ex-Dorke. Sie hat gehabt a Millionärestorke. A Job hat sie gekriegen für die Grüne. Als Leben so Columbus ist Medine. Und wie sie dort noch ungefangen kleben. Finn, mein Cousin ist helf geblieben. Die Bäcker lacht die rote Pomeranzen. Sie haben sich schon ausgegrünt den Ganzen. Ja, das ist
give a little translation of that one, if you will.
Somebody sent for her cousin from Europe, and she came to this country, and she was so, her cheeks were so red, and her voice was like she sang, and her feet, she walked like she wanted to dance, you know. And then her neighbor had a millinery store and gave her a job. And when she started to work in the millinery store and had the job, and she started to save a little money, so the cheeks were not so red anymore, and the feet didn't jump like they did before. It was altogether different. But that was the Greener Cuisine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you can think of about the Jewish theater? Did you go to Second Avenue? Was that?
Yeah. No, that Second Avenue, it was David Kessler's theater. And the Bowery was Tomaszewski's theater. We went to Tomaszewski's theater, was on the Bowery. Yeah, I know that. And of course, then I was very small, because later on, when my mother had children already, she didn't go. But when I was still an only child, as they used to take me, you didn't have a babysitter or anyone. Wherever you went, you took your kid.
Do you remember the Jacob Adler Theater? Jacob Adler.
Yes.
Jacob Adler.
Yeah. I remember, as a kid, Tomaszewski, David Kessler, Adler, and they had other ones. Then when I got bigger already, they had, but I used to go to Molly Pecan. I even saw Molly Pecan in Mayapak. She lived in Mayapak, and I was in the supermarket with my daughter, and she was walking with a wagon with a lady, and my husband went over to her and said to her, "You're Molly Pecan, aren't you?" And she said, "Yeah." So my husband said, "We will watch you for years and years."
What could you say about her, Jenny, about what she was like when you saw her?
Molly Pecan?
On the stage.
Oh, she was marvelous. She could do anything. She was an actress. She would sing. She would dance. She turned somersaults. She did everything. She was little. She was only about 5 feet tall, and she was thin. But she was marvelous, Molly Pecan, yeah. Yeah, they had to all, you know, I used to see that, yeah.
So how did you meet your husband?
Oh, that's a story.
Okay.
That's a story, how I met my husband. When I was 16 years old, it was the Depression. I graduated high school. I went to Washington Irving High School. And I wanted to be a teacher, but my mother wouldn't let me go to be a teacher, because in my time, all the teachers were old maids. There was no married teachers. They were all old maids. And my mother said, "You're not going to be a teacher, because I don't want to want no old maid." So I wanted to go to college, but I had a brother, and my mother said that she has to save that money for my brother to go to college, because my brother is a man that'll have to make a living. But I'm a girl, I'll get married. Women didn't work, so I didn't need it. So I took the commercial course. I did bookkeeping, stenography, and typing. I did the Pittman system typing. And I graduated. I graduated in January, and I was 16 in March, in the end of March. So you couldn't get a job. There was no jobs. So I went to the Underwood Typewriter Company. They gave an exam. And maybe it was on a Friday I went, and it was pouring. I remember it was raining so hard. I wore an old coat with a little tan, and they had maybe 100 people taking the exam. They did a little bookkeeping, and you had to type a letter that they gave you in stenography, and and you had to be there 7 o'clock in the morning. I was there 7 o'clock, and you were there till 12. It took 5 hours. And then you had to do some writing to see your penmanship, you know. And then they caught, and they examined right away, and they called out five people that they had five jobs. And I was one of them. So they told me to go to 12 West 27th Street. I was so green, I didn't even know where 27th Street is. But I found where it was, and I went to 27th Street. And I went to 12 West 27th Street. And they gave you a card, you know, to show that you were sent by them, by the Underwood Typewriter Company. So I remember going in the hall, and the elevator came down, and it was Hiller Brothers and Hiller I worked for. That was on the first floor. They had windows from the bottom to the top. It said Hiller Brothers. So I was looking at the card, and the elevator opened up, and I wore high heels because I wanted to look big. And I stepped on a man, and it was one of Mr. Hiller. I stepped with my heel, and he gave a holler. Can't you see where you're going? I got so scared, you know, I said, I'm trying to go here. He said, it's on the first floor. I went up, and I came in there, and the girl who worked there, she worked there for 13 years, she was getting married. So I worked under her. So when I worked with her, when I came there, she dictated a letter to me in shorthand, and I typed the letter, and then she wanted me to write the first line in longhand. Mm-hmm. And she said, you're hired. I'm hired. That was Friday. And I didn't want to work Friday. It was late. But she said, but I was afraid to say that I want to start the next day because then I wouldn't get the job. So I stayed there. So they gave me $15 a week. And that was a very big salary in those times, $15 a week. So I worked there for a few months, and then the boss called me in, and he said to me, you know, Jenny, I want you to pay attention to what the girl does, because I want you to take her job when she gets married. And I figured, oh, I couldn't take her job. She worked there 13 years. I was only there about 3 months. So I said to the boss, you know, I don't think I'm capable of taking her job. I said, I'm only a beginner, and she's this. He said to me, let me be the judge of that. So I came home and I was crying. And I told my mother I'm gonna quit the job because I can't take her job, I'll mess everything up, and I can't work there. And my mother said, what do you mean you're gonna quit? You can't get a job, there's no work. And you're making $15 a week. It was a lot of money. So what happened was, my mother said, look, if the boss has enough confidence in you, try it. If it doesn't work out, then he'll fire you. So I took the job, and I worked there. And I worked there 3.5 years. And then I want you to know that the boss wanted to marry me. But the trouble was, I was only 19 years old, and he was 40. And I went out with him. I was in Central Park on a Hanscom I rode, you know. I went to the theater with him. I went to restaurants with him, but I liked him, but he was too old for me, you know. A girl of today, a 19-year-old, 20-year-old girl, if she sees a man 40 years old, if he's rich, it doesn't mean anything. But I felt like he was my father, you see. So he took me to his to his mother's house, you know, and I saw that they didn't want me. I was too young for them. Well, at any rate, my boss said to me one day, "Look, Jenny, I don't want to rush you, but try to think it over. It's true, I'm 21 years older than you, and I understand that when you'll be 40, I'll be 61, you know. You think about it." And I said to my mother, I'll get married to him because I will be able to do something for my family. Get my mother off the fourth floor, get her in a steam heater. I only thought of them. And my mother, she was smart. My mother said, "Look, Jenny, getting married is not like buying a dress. You don't like the dress, you won't wear it. When you get married, it's for life." And I was a pretty girl. I was a nice looking girl. And we had a customer in the store. And I had a lot of fellas that wanted to marry me. But my mother didn't approve of them. One was an operator, one was this, one was an accountant. But I didn't care for him. And it's a long story. I wouldn't tell you about that. There was one fella that I used to go in the restaurant to eat. And every time he came in, he told the boss to call him when I'm there so he'll come down. He was in the fur business. But I didn't like him because he was short and I liked a tall man. He was short and somehow or other I couldn't take to him. He wanted to shoot me because he said nobody will get me, you know, if he doesn't. I had a very hard time that time. We had a customer across the street, and she had a cousin that was my husband. And his mother, he was an only child, and his mother was a very sick woman, and she wanted to see him married. At that time, I was 19, and he was 8 years older than me. So she told my mother that her cousin would be very good for me. So my mother said that she'll talk to me. So my mother we didn't have a telephone, but she wanted the phone where I worked so he could call me up. So I said, "Ma, I got so many fellas, I don't know who to marry, I can't." My mother said to me, "Look, what do you got to lose? Let him call you." So one day I get a call in the place and the man says, "I'm so-and-so's cousin, Maya." His name was Maya. "And I would like to meet you." So, you know, I wasn't even anxious. I said to him, "All right, I'll meet you downstairs." So he said, "Don't you think it would be nicer for me to meet you in your house?" I said, "Okay." So he came. And I met him. And as soon as I saw him, I fell in love with him. He was such a handsome man. Tall, I have a picture here. He was so wonderful, I can't tell you. And I went out with him. And I went out with him 6 times. And after the 6 times, he came one Saturday night and he said to me, "You know, Jenny, I brought you a little present." I figured he brought me a pin or something. He took a little velvet box out of his pocket. And a little velvet box was a ring. And it was an engagement ring. And he says to me, "I bought this for you." And I said to him, I was very happy, but I said to him, "How do you buy a girl an engagement ring when you don't even ask her if she wants to get engaged to you?" He says to me, "If you don't take this ring, Jenny, I'm throwing it in the East River because nobody's ever going to wear this." And of course, I put the ring on my finger. And he said to me, "You see the difference between the people today?" He said to me, "I think now I could kiss you." And he kissed me. And that's how. And then the following day, I met his parents. Yeah. And that's how I got married. And when I got married, you know, I had a table for my boss and his brothers and his sister and the people that worked there. Do you know that he came over to me? I'll never forget it. About a half hour before the ceremony, and he says to me, "Jenny, you look so beautiful. You still, it's not too late. You could change your mind." And I got married. And of course, I had to quit the job because my husband said, "There's only one breadwinner in this house, and that's me." Wouldn't have a wife working.
Now, did Meyer come from Russia too?
He came from Bialystok. He was born in Bialystok. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his people were Bialystoker.
And did he come as a young man, a young boy?
That's what I told you. He came when he was 5 years, when this was a church.
So,
and I was married 56 years. Those were the best years of my life. I had a man that was so good to me. He idolized me. Nobody was as pretty as me. Nobody was as smart as me. Nobody was as good as me. When he came, he gave me the money. He never asked me, what you do with it or what, nothing. And we had a very good life, very good life. And we had three children. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't you say your children's names?
Hey?
What were your children's names?
My Hindi is Harriet, but she's named after my grandmother. And my mother said she will never call her Harriet. She will call her Hindi, because her mother's name was Hindi. So it remained with her. She only signs Harriet, but even her husband calls her Hindi. And then I had Ellen. She was her Hebrew name, her Jewish name was Esther Asher. So we gave her name Ellen. If you remember Ellen McKay, when they had she married from the McKays. They were from the, you sent telegrams. And her name was Ellen, and I thought that was a very pretty name, and I named her Ellen. And then I had Bobby. Bobby was Robert. Bobby, I had a very good mother-in-law, and I was so crazy for her that I wanted to have a name for her. But I had Bobby, so they had to change the name. So Bobby is named after my mother-in-law. Yeah, I had a mother-in-law that was so good to me. She was, if my mother would say one word to me, she would say to my mother, "What are you aggravating the child? She knows more than you. Don't aggravate her." She stuck up for me all the time. I have a lot of stories, but I can't tell everything. Yeah, my mother-in-law was very good to me, very good. And then when I got married, I lived in the Bronx because we couldn't get an apartment here.
Okay, so you moved to the Bronx because you couldn't get an apartment.
My mother-in-law wanted me to live in a nice house with a bathroom, with a bathtub. So I moved in Grand Avenue. I lived in the Bronx near the. UNOC University had a place there, so I lived there. But I was in a walk-up, but I had a modern apartment with a bathtub, with a very, very nice, yeah.
So how did you feel leaving the Lower East Side?
Oh, I used to come down every day. Yeah, I used to go to my mother-in-law. We used to have supper. My husband had his place in Eldridge Street, and then we used to go back. Yeah. And when I was engaged to my husband, I went to Flushing, Long Island, where her grandmother had Sam's house. Yeah. I used to spend the weekend there. I got around, you know.
When you started school, did you know English by then?
Well, I'll tell you, my mother started to go to night school. My mother was more educated than my father. And my mother used to say to me, I should speak English to her. So I used to try to, when I went to kindergarten, I knew, you know, but most of the kids that went there were all foreigners, you know. And I picked up everything very fast.
Did you have, what was school like? Did you have like a favorite teacher? Was there anybody
I had teachers. We had some very good teachers. And I remember that when I went to high school, I graduated, I was only 12 years old. I went to high school when I was 12. And I know that I belonged to the Education Alliance, to a sewing class. I educated myself, you know. But my people, you know, they were foreign people. But they understood, my mother understood English very well. But they didn't read English, no.
Could you say anything about the Educational Alliance?
Oh, yes. It's still there, you know. The Educational Alliance, I used to go there. For a penny, 2 cents, they gave you a big schooner of milk with a cracker. You used to go there. And I belonged to a club there. It was a sewing club. I had a sewing teacher. She showed us how to embroider, to do things. Yeah, it was very, very, the Education Alliance was a marvelous place. They had a roof garden, used to go on the roof garden. And they used to have, sometimes, they used to have music. They had an auditorium. Sometimes they showed a movie, yeah.
Did you ever go dancing?
I didn't go dancing. In the Education Alliance, you would have dancing. But when I got married, I could dance, my husband couldn't. So when we used to go to a wedding, the only thing he could dance was a waltz. But when it used to come to do other things, I used to dance with somebody else, and he didn't like it. So we went to Stuyvesant. They had a dancing class, and we paid, and my husband learned to do the samba, the foxtrot, and all that. Because he used to say, nobody's going to dance with you, only me. Yeah.
When you look back on it, you're such a spunky person. Do you think the immigrant experience that you were so young, but that your family had coming to a new place, and do you think that had a part to play in your character? Do you think that something of your personality came out because?
No, they only. I remember my father used to say, "Zihata ministerschen Kopf." That I have the head of a minister, you know, I have a very good head, he used to say, my father, you know. And I was his favorite. Yeah. He was, because I did everything. My mother had to go to court, I went to court with her. I mean, and my father became a citizen. He used to come to my house every night, and I used to teach him. The questions, you know, what they're going to ask him and what they're going to say and everything. And for months, he knew everything, you know, who was the vice president and everything he knew. And when he got to court, he lost he couldn't talk. The judge asked him questions, he couldn't answer. And the judge said, well, you'll have to come back some other time. And I was there. And my brother had come from the army. And my brother had a purple heart. And when the judge said to my, I said to the judge, my father knows all the answers. He's just so frightened, you know. He says, yeah, but you can't speak for him. So when he said he has to come back, I said to the judge, I'll never forget that. I said to the judge, you mean to say that my father isn't good enough to become a citizen of the United States when his son has a Purple Heart, that he was in the army and fought for this country? And the judge went ahead and made him a citizen because I said that. He said, you know, he changed his idea all of a sudden. And he said, Mr. Strauss, if your son has a Purple Heart that he fought for this country, you are entitled to be a citizen. So he made him a citizen. Yeah.
What else?
That's what I did.
Wonderful. What else do you remember about World War II? Either the build-up to World War II or
oh,
what
I remember the war. I used to stand on the corner and talk and try to sell the Liberty Bonds. Yeah, yeah, you're such a, I did that.
Why did you do that? Who were you?
I was for this country, you know. I remember we used to make dolls, rag dolls, to send across, you know, to Europe. Yeah, yeah, I did those things. I don't know, when I come to think of it, I don't know, I was just, and I remember when I went to high school, I took Spanish as a language, you know, because Spanish at that time was used a lot in business. And so I remember that the teacher gave us a poem to study, a poem. I'll never forget this. And the poem, if I would study, I would sing it. As a song, you learned it faster. So I remember the song was, Yo soy tu paloma blanca, tu eres mi pichón azul. And I sang it, and my father, my mother heard me sing, and my mother didn't know that I'm studying a song. So my mother said, she only goes to schools, she speaks the language already. Yeah, yeah. But we only had Spanish one period a week. Yeah, it wasn't the Spanish, you know. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, habla said that, habla usted español, you know. Yeah, you know, things like that.
Is there anything else about your...
The only thing I'm sorry is that my people didn't speak Russian to me, that I would know Russian. I didn't know nothing. I only know... something used to say about that you speak Russian, yeah. But I never spoke Russian.
How about your religion? Did as you became Americanized, did your idea about your religion change at all?
No. We were kosher. We kept two sets of dishes. We didn't cook on Saturday. And that is in me. You see, I don't cook on Saturday. It's only the late couple of years that I don't ride on Saturday. I used to ride on Saturday because my husband, the only day he had off was Saturday, because we were in the business where the whole section was closed on Saturday. So I used to ride. But now that I got old and I feel that I shouldn't be doing that, so I don't do that. You know, let me say something to you. You know, you are not born of your own free will, right? And you don't die of your own free will, but you will be accountable of not of your own free will. And there was a man that went to a synagogue and we talked about religion. And he said to the crowd, you're not born of your own free will. You don't die of your own free will, but you will be accountable not of your own free will. And the man got up, a young man got up and said, why should I be accountable, not of my own free will, if I'm born out of not of my own free will, and I die not of my own free will? It's a long thing, but you want to hear it?
Mm.
And he said, let me give you an instance. There was a man that had two daughters. One was very ugly, and one had a very vile tongue, and he couldn't marry them off. Nobody wanted to marry a very ugly one, and nobody wanted to marry anyone with a vile tongue. So there came a matchmaker, and the matchmaker said, look, leave it to me. I will marry them off. And the man said, oh, it would be a marvelous thing. So the one that was very ugly, he married to a blind man. And the one who had a vile tongue, he married to a deaf man. And believe it or not, they lived very well together. So one time a doctor came from a town and he said, you know, I could operate on you, I could make you see, and I could make you hear. But it'll cost a certain amount of money, and they agreed. So he operated on the man that was blind, and the man could see, and he operated on the deaf man, and the man could hear. But when it came to pay, they didn't want to pay him. So the doctor went to court. And the judge said to them, look, why don't you want, you made up with him to pay him for your sight and for your hearing. Why don't you want to pay him? And the man that was blind said, he says, now he says, my wife is repulsive to me. She's so ugly. I never knew she was so ugly. And the deaf man said, my wife has such a vile tongue, I can't stand the way she talks. So that's why they didn't want to pay. So the judge said, look, if you don't want to pay him, you don't have to pay him, but you have to go back to where you were before. He'll make you blind and he'll make you deaf. And that they didn't want. So the judge said, the man said, if you value your life so much, you don't want to go back to the way you were, then you have to pay the doctor. You have to. So he brought out that, you see, you're alive and you want to be alive and you live, but you are accountable for what you have to do. When you go up to heaven, you are accountable for what you did.
Now, where did that story come from?
I read it. I read it, and it had a very impression on me, that what you do in this world, when you come to the other world, you have to pay for what you did. No free lunch. And so the Jewish people believe in tzedakah. You know what tzedakah is? Charity. According to the Jewish religion, you should give 10% of what you earn for charity. You should do that. You know, you shouldn't, if you lend somebody money who needs it, you shouldn't take interest from them. You know. So in the Jewish people always had a pushka, a box. I have it. Where when you used to light candles, you always threw in something for the poor people. Yeah. And then, you know, there's things there, you know, that you have to pray, you have to. So now that, you know, my hourglass is running out, I feel that although I always was very charitable, all the time, even when I was a child, I always put a penny in the pushka. And when I went to high school, I used to walk to, I didn't walk to get there because you had to be there 8 o'clock, but I used to walk home because I saved a nickel. And I used to walk home with the girls, and we used to buy ice cream from a man, a double dip cone for 5 cents. And if I walked and an old man came over to me and said, you know, I didn't eat today, I would give him my nickel. And the girls used to say, oh, you're crazy. Why, you're walking to eat an ice cream cone, so you give him. But I felt better giving somebody who didn't eat something than I would enjoy from the ice cream cone. You know, and I've been that way all my life. I mean, I never turn anybody down. I belong to charitable organizations. I always do that.
When you look back on your life,
yeah,
what are your greatest satisfactions?
I really don't. I was very happy. I mean, I was never. I felt that God has been very good to me. The only thing is that God took my daughter away. But I feel that I was a fortunate person. That I never knew that I'm poor or that I was happy. I always felt that I'm a fortunate person, and I still feel that God is good to me. Look, I'm living so long. I have 7 grandchildren. I have 3 great-grandchildren. My children are all very fine children. They went to college. They all had college. My daughter is a professor. She's an anthropologist in a college. She's married to a scientist that's known all over the world. I mean, I feel that I don't feel that I'm any better, that it's coming to me, that I'm any better than anybody else. But I feel fortunate. And when I go to sleep, I pray, I thank God every day for the day. And when I get up, I thank him for the day. And I speak to my daughter, I speak to my husband, I tell him everything that went on. I feel like they're on a way, you know, but they're not gone. Yeah, and I told you that my mother-in-law was so good to me. My mother-in-law and my father-in-law. I tell them, I that's the way I am. I don't know, maybe I'm stupid, but this is something that keeps me going.
And what else do you do now that you're older, children are grown? Yes, what's life like for you now?
Well, I'll tell you, see. I can't walk. Now I don't see. But I still want my own place. Now, I wouldn't live with my daughter in Mayapak. She's not kosher. And I don't think that my son-in-law, he was an orphan. I don't think that he would be very happy, although he likes me, if I lived with them. And especially my daughter would have to help me. I would be like a third leg, you know what I mean? No. So as long as I'm able to function, I'm able to do things myself. I have this girl that comes and helps me. I get somebody to clean up for me, but I'm able to do. My mind is not like somebody that's 96 and a half years old. But I don't know how long that'll go on. But I wouldn't like to go to a home. If I have to have somebody, you see, I can't be on Medicaid. See, if I was on Medicaid, I could have somebody stay with me, 2 in help, 1 for the daytime and 1 for the nighttime. But I have a little money, I have a little income, and I couldn't do that. Now, you see how my son is. I wanted to put the money on his name. Because in order to be on Medicaid, you can only have $3,000. So I wanted to do that. And my son said to me, Mama, you don't do things like that. You have to use your money when you don't. Daddy left you money. You have to live on that money. They never got a penny. It all went to me. And when you don't have money, then we'll talk about things. But Mama, people shouldn't pay taxes for you just because you're giving me money. No, he wouldn't do that. So I can't be on Medicaid. I have to pay my own way for everything. And that's what I'm doing. I pay $500 a month rent. I pay $220 for health insurance. I pay for a telephone. I'll show you what I wear. I pay for the lifeline, that if I fell and something, I press here. This is the thing that I have there. That's why I said don't touch. So that's what I do. I'm alone. I sleep alone. And I put this near my bed, you know. I have a telephone near my bed. And I manage myself. You see, I could eat across the street. They have a lunchroom. That's a federal program. You could be a millionaire and eat there. But I don't like their food. So sometimes if I'm not cooking, I take something from there. The girl brings it to me. But otherwise, I do it myself. And Sunday, my Bobby, God bless him, comes every Sunday. And he brings me everything that I want. And he takes me out for dinner. I go for dinner with him. He takes me to the Pathmark. He goes in and he buys what I need. And when I have to go to the doctor, I go with this girl. She goes with me. I can't go by myself. Mm-hmm. I call the accessor ride. You're entitled to that. And they come and they pick me up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And only if I have to go with my eyes, my Bobby will take me or my daughter will take me. But I try not to bother. I try to do things myself. I'm used to that, you see. I always had a responsibility, so I grew up that way. And that's why I used to play the stock market, I told you. I didn't show Freya. You see, there's a Freya. Mm-hmm. There's a pillow I want to show you. You see a pillow?
Here.
Yeah, yeah. I told her about it. My Hindi was in a mayor pack in a flea market, and she saw this pillow. And this is, you know, it's all made.
Handmade.
It's a needlepoint. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, this picture is also needlepoint a lady made for me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so the woman says, oh, she says, your mother must, she says, I want to buy this for my mother. So the lady says, oh, your mother must like to do needlepoint. So she says, no, it isn't needlepoint, but my mother likes the stock market. And that's how I got this pillow.
Well, so is that how you made your fortune, Jenny?
No, not that I didn't make a fortune, but I told Janet that when I was young, I always said, when you're young, you work to make money. You have to work to make mm-hmm. money. But when you get old and you can't work, your money has to work for you.
That's wise. That
yeah.
sure is wise.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
have to know that when we're young.
So I've been in the stock market. You don't always make money, but the stock market owes me nothing.
That's terrific.
But now, you see, I used to look at the stock sheet, you know. I told her, I used to buy on margin. I used to do the commodity. I did puts and calls. I did everything.
How about your husband?
My husband didn't like it. My husband used to say, but he never stopped me from doing anything. He used to say, I don't like to put money in people's business that I don't know nothing about. But I didn't feel that way. I felt that I'm investing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah, of course, some things weren't so good. But in the long run, it's what you did.
That's right.
Yeah. There was a time I used to buy 25 shares. You know, I didn't have enough money, you know. But that's what I did.
But you had foresight.
Huh?
You had foresight.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
What did your husband, did we talk about what Jenny's
husband My husband
did?
Had a store. We had a store. Oh, my husband also did a lot of things. My husband had a store in Eldridge Street. You know,
mm-hmm.
cotton goods. You know what cotton goods is?
Yes.
We sold sheets and pillowcases, and we had a partner. My husband had that.
A linen store.
Huh?
Linens,
bedspreads, curtains, everything. Yeah, yeah.
There were many stores on the Lower East Side that sold.
Yeah, that was the whole section.
It was Grand Street.
Yeah, yeah, but they sold retail, but they also sold wholesale. But used to sell peddlers. There was customer peddlers. You know what customer peddlers is?
No.
You get
I'm
an education.
A lot.
The people that didn't have a trade, they became a customer peddler. They would knock at the door and they would say, we'll sell you sheets, pillowcases, furniture. And they sold you everything. And you used to go ahead and pay it out, you know. They would used to come and collect $2 a week, $3 a week. I mean, that's how the things were done. My mother had a pair of diamond earrings. She bought it from a peddler, and they would pay out. So the trade was customer peddlers. They used to come with a horse and wagon, and we used to charge, you know, I used to make out a bill. And then they used to pay you. But you see, a customer peddler, if he sold you something that he paid $5, he had to sell it to you for 10 or for 12 because he had to make. So most of the people were customer peddlers. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was the name of your
My name
store?
Of the store we had was Grower and Levitsky.
So you had a partner?
Yeah, we had a partner because when my husband went in that business, he didn't know nothing about that business. My husband was in the dried fruit business. He was a builder. They built 4 family houses in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. I mean, he did things like that. So when he went in this business, he had to put in $10,000. And his father and he, They got this partner who put in only $1,500. My husband put in $10,000 and he put in $1,500 because he was the man that knew the business. So we had a lawyer who read out the papers. And at that time, Jenny said, you know, after Maya is working there a number of years, he will have experience. So he should draw more money, but the guy didn't want it. The guy said, we are equal partners, but not to the investment. They weren't equal partners. My husband, they drew the same salary, $40 a week, $40 a week. But when they were in business together for 19 years, and they got along very well, and we made a living. And I used to play the market on the side.
Did you work in the store too?
No. This was before, when we went in the business, Levitsky was the same age as my husband, but he had already 2 children. He got married, he was very religious. He got married very young. So he said, you know, your wife will come in and be the bookkeeper. And my husband said, look, your wife don't work here, and my wife don't work here. So they had somebody. But I used to come once a week sometimes to check up, you know. Mm. They had an accountant, you know. And they were partners for 19 years. They were such good partners that on the block they used to be, people used to become partners, and they you know, folded up. Nobody's like Grower Levitsky. But one time Levitsky came and he said to Maya, you know, my daughter's getting married and my son-in-law cannot work on the Sabbath or holidays. I have to take him in, and that wouldn't be good. So Levitsky said to Maya, you know, Maya, either pay me out or I'll pay you out. And my husband said, you pay me out. And that's how we parted. Yeah. Then we opened up. It's too long to talk. I could talk for days.
We'll come back.
Jenny, just before we close,
if
you could say something about what it meant to you to go visit Ellis Island for your cousin's birthday.
It was something that I couldn't believe it. First of all, I couldn't believe that she did this thing. I mean, it's unbelievable to me to be in contact with everybody.
And we
went across the bridge, you know, we didn't even go with the, and my Bobby wanted to take a chair, my chair, and he wouldn't be able to take anybody in the car. And she arranged that they came with a chair. I don't know, I just felt like it was unbelievable that people could do things, that I'm nothing to what people could do, you know. I mean, it's something unusual, so unusual. And I the speaker, the pictures that I saw, the movie, I got cold, you know, when I saw it, you know, though I didn't see it, but to see how the people were in the, and the people that had to go back, and it broke my heart. And of course, I didn't see everything, but the place is gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Even the bathrooms are gorgeous. They even had bars for people that are handicapped. I mean, it was really something. And the food was very, very, very good. Everything was so beautiful. I couldn't sleep that night, and I am still in a fog. I still can't believe it. I told it to my Hindi, and my Hindi says, Marcus, you don't get around it. That's what people, I said, nobody could do what she did.
Jenny, say Freya's name.
Say nobody could do what Freya
what Fre-
did.
Nobody could do what Freya did. I mean, everything that was done is unbelievable that a human being could get in contact and do things like that. I mean, I would never think of it. Yeah, yeah. In my book, she's the greatest.
I'll have to make copies of that.
Yeah. Jenny, yeah. Before the tape is nearly over, but maybe, is there anything else you want to say before we finish?
Oh, you still got
the
song? We've
got a couple of minutes, a minute or so.
Well, all I could say is, I'd say like my Hindi says, Mama, it's a wonderful thing that Grandpa came to this country and that you came to this country, because you would never be alive, nobody would be alive. And I think, you know, when I think of this country, it's unbelievable. I mean, what's done for people, which we're so deprived of everything. I can't begin to tell you, but I will tell you this, that the Jewish people were very progressive. And I'll give you an instance. My father, when he had the butcher store, we had a family living on the ground floor, and they had come from Europe. And they had a little girl, and her name was Machala, and I remember that she was standing outside, and of course she didn't know English, and she was watching the children play, and her mother kept calling her, Machala, 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 and she wouldn't answer. So I said to her, Machala, dein Mama rief dir, your mother's calling you. She says, I know she's calling me, but ich will sie soll retten sie mir Goyish. She didn't know the English, but English was to her Goyish. She wants her mother to talk to her Goyish. So I said to her, your mother doesn't know Goyish. She said, she was only about 3-4 years old. She knows, she knows. I want her to speak Goyish to me so I could play with the children. And then she said to me, in Yiddish, heisach machala. And in Goyish, she didn't know how to say Miriam. She said, in Goyish, heisach midjim. See, so even a little kid like that already wanted, there was no such thing as a linguist in school. You learned, you didn't have anybody speak Spanish or what, no, you did it on your own. I mean, you put your feet to the ground. To me, that's ridiculous that they have a Spanish speaking, you come to this country, you have to be like this country. English should be the language. You can learn to speak all languages. You don't have to give up speaking Yiddish because Yiddish is also a language, but English should be, you live in an English speaking country, you should be English. You can't become a president if you're not born in this country, but you could be everything else. You could be a congressman, but you can't be a president. A president has to be born in this country. But the opportunities that you have, the people, they went to night school, they became dentists, they became doctors, they became lawyers, they made something of themselves. They didn't depend on welfare. No. This is the best country in the world. There's no other country like the United States. And I feel that I'm lucky to be here.
Okay, I want to thank you for a beautiful interview. I've been speaking with Jenny.
Listen, your people, come in and have a drink or something.
Okay, let me just sign off. I'm speaking with Jenny Grower, who came in 1905 at 1.5 years of age from Odessa, Russia.
Yeah.
And this is Janet Levine signing off for the National Park Service.